It seems like only yesterday the party would go on forever. But in just 12 short months, the place known as America's Spring Break Capital has become a virtual ghost town. Who can forget the devastating attack on Lake Victoria that left scores of young people dead and a community in shock? And who could have guessed that this hell on Earth would be wrought by a species of piranha believed extinct for the last 2 million years?
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Piranha Retrospective Series.
Piranha?
Well, they changed it a little, made it nastier.
Hosted by Arnie.
I need to relax more.
Stuart.
Welcome to rock bottom.
And Brock.
They're organized, methodical. The first fight draws blood. The blood draws the pack.
This episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
Well, you're sure that it's not dangerous?
We hope you enjoy the show.
Now, we must call to the fish in the traditional style.
Today we're talking about Piranha 3D, starring Elizabeth Shue, Stephen R. McQueen, Adam Scott, Jessica Sior, Jerry O'Connell, Kelly Brook, Ving Rhames, Christopher Lloyd, and Richard Dreyfuss. Directed by Alexandra Aja. This is Brock, co-host of Now Playing in 3D.
And Stuart.
And this is the Now Playing co-host who, if fish looked like Elizabeth Shue in Leaving Las Vegas, I would fuck fish. I would only fuck fish. And my name's Arnie.
All right.
Weird imagery in my head right now.
I mean, Elizabeth Shue, if you're listening to this, our apologies. Well, welcome back to our Piranha Retrospective. Just so you're curious, this podcast is in 3D for your ears. It's going to burst your eardrums so amazingly. Actually, it was a post-conversion job, so it's probably not going to be that good in 3D. Anyway, I am really excited about talking about this one because this is the movie that really put Piranha back on the proverbial map. When this thing came out, it was actually a deal. And who would have thought that that crappy movie from the 70s would come back with such fervor?
You know, Brock, you say that, but it's actually a flop. I just want to put out there, I thought this was a hit movie as well, but it cost $25 million and it made $25 million. So it's only because the Europeans gravitated to this movie that they made another one.
And I remember when I went and saw Avatar back in 2009 and we reviewed it for Now Playing, and I don't think I said it on the show, but I was so much more excited for the trailer for Piranha 3D that played before Avatar than I was to talk about Avatar. I mean, this trailer was attached to Avatar, and I was so excited. I'd never seen a Piranha film before, but look at this cast. Jerry O'Connell, Christopher Lloyd, Richard Dreyfuss, Elizabeth Shue.
Yeesh! Terrible! Terrible!
Well, I disagree with that. I mean, Kevin Bacon should have been in this cast, A. B, I had the same reaction Arnie did. I didn't care. Didn't make a lot of money, Stuart. Everybody I knew was talking about this trailer. I was talking about this trailer. I didn't go see it, but...
Okay.
Everybody I know saw it when it came on video, for sure, because why wouldn't you want to watch a TNA spectacle with fish? I mean, this seemed so bonkers, and the trailer really convey what we were talking about last episode of this retrospective, that they get what they're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, I was in theaters opening weekend for this. Maybe there weren't a lot of people in theaters opening weekend, but Marjorie and I had our glasses on and big smiles on our face in 2010 August.
Okay, so you did see this in 3D. I saw this for the first time 2 days ago on streaming HBO, so not an option for me. Let me just reframe where we were at Now Playing. It had been 18 months since I had been on the show. There was no discussion about doing it. We hadn't even covered Jaws yet. This was the summer of Karate Kid, Scott Pilgrim, Inception. We had other stuff on the brain. I barely noted that this movie even existed.
I had heard about it. I did not see it until this review. However, it was a pretty big deal, especially right after Avatar. and being connected, as Arnie said, to the Avatar movie itself and how much money that movie makes. So honestly, the awareness was high. It just didn't convert to box office dollars. But on the other hand, I agree with Arnie. If I was watching HBO, if I still had cable in 2010, which I didn't, I had already cut the cord, and this came on and I didn't know it was Piranha and I saw the cast go up on the screen, I would have totally sat down to watch this, like if it was just on, because this cast alone makes you want to, you're curious on what are they doing in this? Why would Elizabeth Shue, who had an Oscar nomination and who was in, you know, the classic Karate Kid movie and Adventures in Babysitting, why would she do a Piranha movie? That's a head scratcher. Why would Richard Dreyfuss do this? And the answer is, of course, we all know why Richard Dreyfuss did this movie, but you would still, Christopher Lloyd, why? Why? You don't need a paycheck that badly, do you?
I just to, again, reset the expectations. All of them were decades past their prime, and I feel like do maybe slightly overrated work. I'm not really a fan of anyone in this cast, although they've all turned in good films occasionally.
So Richard Dreyfuss has like 10 great movies.
Maybe three. I never liked him. I'll just put it out there. I don't like him. The reason I would be most curious about this movie is that it's coming from horror aficionado. I don't know how we want to bill him. He's not quite a horror master, but we've talked a lot about Alexandre Aja. We were asked by a patron long ago to cover his early breakout slasher film, High Tension, and he, of course, did the successful Hills Have Eyes reboot. He's got several films like Piranha 3D on his resume, including pretty recently a killer crocodile movie that did pretty well called Crawl.
Yeah, I saw Crawl. It was good. I saw it because of him. And yeah, High Tension, Hills Have Eyes, recommended them both. And I think I said in both of those reviews, I know this guy from Piranha 3D. This was the first of his films that I saw.
Interestingly enough, it wasn't always him. Or he was one of many directors that Dimension was circling when he was off making Hills Have Eyes. They went to, probably would have been a good choice, Chuck Russell, the director of the best Nightmare on Elm Street movie, that's part three, as well as he did Jim Carrey's Mask, Eraser, and a pretty underrated Blob movie that I hope we can cover one day. He wanted to do it as a thriller. He is a fan of Spielberg, and he wanted, you know, to have a monster movie. He knew it was a drive-in kind of movie, but the thing that he assured the Weinsteins was, I'm going to make this a horror movie. I'm going to scare folks. And so it's kind of funny that it wound up going back to Aja, who his pitch was sharks gone wild. And I definitely think that you're not going to think about horror or thriller too much when you watch this movie.
No, this is a comedy through and through. As the entire concept should be, by the way. Killer fish is funny.
I agree. They went with the right tone right away, and I am unfamiliar with this director. I have not seen any of the projects you all have just cited yet. However, I, for one, am happy he's here after watching the movie, and we'll talk about it as we go. I think he has the right tone, and he adds just the right amount of, well, compared to last time especially, the production values are insanely prevalent. So it's nice to have a competent, if not severely overqualified director do this movie.
Yeah, $25 million is, like, you're right. We've never had a Piranha movie even near to this kind of budget. You can feel it. For some people, this is the first real movie because it doesn't have that low-budget sheen at all. But is it the best? Debatable. Arnie, let's get into it. Give them the plot.
It's spring break and all the college-age people are ready to get their drink on and party at Lake Victoria, Arizona. Unfortunately, an underwater earthquake opened a passage to a deeper area of the lake, releasing a school of prehistoric piranhas. The fish start to terrorize and feed on the co-eds. Trying to evacuate the lake is Sheriff Julie Forrester, played by Elizabeth Shue. She had a slightly early warning about the killer fish as a group of seismologists, led by a man named Novak, played by Adam Scott?
Yeah, interesting choice.
Against type?
Enlisted the sheriff to help them investigate the underwater earthquake. The sheriff, along with Deputy Fallon, played by Ving Rhames, try in vain to get the people out of the water. A slaughter occurs when the fish do reach the party area. Not only are scores of nameless young adults eaten, but Sheriff Forrester's own children are in danger. Despite promising to stay home and babysit, Forrester's oldest son, Jake, played by Steve R. McQueen, snuck out. He was hired by Derek Jones, played by Jerry O'Connell, maker of the Wild Wild Girls films. Derek's cameraman Andrew, played by Paul Scheer, and a couple of models are filming topless and sexy scenes and want Jake to show them the local spots. Also coming along is Jake's crush Kelly, played by Jessica Zohr. Jake's two younger siblings, Zane and Laura, also snuck out to go fishing and end up with Jake on Derek's boat. Derek's boat gets caught on some rocks and starts to sink. Derek and his models are eaten by piranha, and it seems Zane, Laura, Jake, and Kelly will also be fish food. Sheriff Forrester, aided by Novak, arrives just in time to save the four youths, and Jake blows up the sinking boat, seemingly killing all the piranha. Except, these piranha were just the babies. A giant adult piranha jumps from the water and eats Novak, as credits roll.
And as they start, yeah, I didn't know this. I didn't know a lot about this movie, but that Richard Dreyfuss, 35 years after Jaws, is willing to come back, sing Show Me the Way to Go Home, and play a character named Matt in a boat is, yes, definitely some kind of joke.
Yeah, it's definitely a joke, but it's also a cha-ching. Like, the guy wasn't working very much at this point. I don't really want to talk out of school. I don't know from personal knowledge. I just know that at this point, he had burned a lot of bridges. So, you know, he got the work here, spoofing himself and probably his most famous legacy role by being a fisherman who dies in this first scene.
Great casting, because we've all said we're doing these films because they're a Jaws ripoff. So to bring this Jaws alum in here to be eaten by the fish is a great wink to a knowing audience and an interesting first kill, even if you don't know, hey, that guy was in Jaws.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. He knocks a beer bottle down, which is just a way of having us delight in what I assume is pretty good 3D.
Tremendous 3D in this film. It's the in-your-face 3D that I prefer. It's gimmickier instead of what James Cameron's going to do with all the depth and things.
Wait. I know you don't like Avatar, but Avatar is a splendid-looking film.
But I just prefer when 3D pops out in your face, like in the old Friday the 13th 3D stuff, instead of
the amazing-looking world that he built that I think you should give him props for.
I'd rather have Jerry O'Connell's dick floating in my face than Avatar 2.
Please, everyone, listeners, isolate that track and put it as your ringtone. I do think that it was completely obvious which shots were meant to be in your face. I watched it 2D for the first time for this review. I clearly saw what they were doing and why they lingered on the bottle. However, did the bottle cause the earthquake?
This is what I mean about confusing. It took me a minute to realize that one had nothing to do with the other. You would think, cause and effect, the bottle hitting the ground creates the big tremor, but that makes no sense. It just so happens that there is a minor seismic event that opens up this lake. A crack in it appears, releasing a school of piranha.
A prehistoric piranha, and they set it up brilliantly because in the beginning, the first shot before we see Richard Dreyfuss, after all the credits, they see a sign that says Mesolithic era dig site. It was a fenced-in area, so he may not have been supposed to be fishing over there, but he did it. And when I saw Mesolithic, I started laughing my head off because I'm like, oh, they're going there. What a great idea.
Yeah, but why not Jurassic? I mean, why can't you just say welcome to Jurassic Piranha? There's a joke there.
I think Mesolithic is a Jurassic joke. Again, it doesn't have to be on the nose, right?
I agree.
And the fact that Richard Dreyfuss is literally caught in like a toilet spin now, like his career literally going down a toilet. I thought he would live. I was surprised. It made sense after the fact, but I actually thought when he appeared here, I was like, oh, they're going to keep him around to be the expert for the film. But this is a filled cast and there would be no room for him. He is an opening kill and yeah, he gets it right away. Without a doubt, we see the teeth. We see the water go red. We see the hand come up with a lot of bites in it. He's dead.
From everything I hear about working with Richard Dreyfuss these days, the best thing for the crew and the rest of the cast is that he had one scene alone and was killed in it.
So, Arnie, you said the special effects, the 3D effects were great. I found these CGI effects have not aged well at all, but say it nicely here. The whirlpool, his head popping out of that whirlpool. I thought the whirlpool looked bad in At World's End, Pirates of the Caribbean. This was much worse. I did not enjoy the CGI water in this scene at all.
But here's the thing, Brock. I agree. Definitely. Movies that I remember thinking look good go back to them 12 years now on 13 And you go, ooh, maybe not. But because this is a B-movie and one that is laughing at its own premise, that it looks cheap now is not a problem or a barrier to enjoying the film.
Let me just go a step further and say, it didn't look real back then. I wasn't wowed by the amazing CGI back then. I knew what I was watching. And, you know, a few years before this, we had the really bad CGI snakes and Snakes on a Plane. But I'd rip that apart because Snakes on a Plane didn't actually have the sense of fun that its title implies. This has the fun that even in theaters, I'm looking at this bad CGI and I completely roll with it because, as Stuart says, it's a B-movie and I'm able to just smile at kind of the hokiness of it as compared to demanding photoreal skulls, photoreal whirlpools, and photoreal piranha.
Okay, but a lot of the other effects in this do look great and I do enjoy them. Some of the body gore things are obviously over the top silly, but the majority of the shots, the special effect shots, I found entertaining, but not this bad. So I understand your point. I just felt this was at a different level of cheesy. That's all.
It's not one of the better effects, but maybe even the special effects artist hate Richard Dreyfuss and didn't want to work on his scenes. Anyway, I want to circle back on one thing that I heard you say, Arnie. I think you're right. Snakes on a Plane was some kind of lesson. That movie had expected to be another late summer hit. The internet went wild for it. As you guys say, the same anticipation for Piranha, and then the audience didn't turn out. You were disappointed in Snakes on a Plane. I never heard your actual review.
You never listened to Snakes on a Podcast?
I mean, probably 20 years ago.
Yes, I did an entire podcast leading up to Snakes on a Plane, including interviews with Samuel L. Jackson and Kenan Thompson and the director and the snake wrangler. Was so excited for Snakes on a Plane. And then the final episode, we reviewed it and we're like, meh.
Okay. And why meh? I'm hearing it's meh because it wasn't in your face enough.
Correct. It lacked the fun and it just, you could see that they went back and tried to insert some of the absurdity that you wanted that movie to have throughout, but it was very isolated and the plot tried to take itself too seriously in many ways with the crime lord bit. And I haven't seen it since theaters, but my overall feeling was not as fun as promised.
Okay, and so I'm going to, probably not surprisingly, take a counter position of, I feel like that film straddled the difference between actually being a thrilling film and being a campy treat better than what we're here to talk about. This movie is going to go all in your face, dick all the time, tits everywhere, blood all over, and it is kind of exhausting. I'm going to just go ahead and say, that again, if you came to this wanting to see the Aja that had scared you in High Tension, or even Crawl, he's not really going to go there. I don't think that there is anything for horror fans here.
There is if you can go with just the splatter and the gore. There's nothing scary in this film, but as a horror fan of all types of horror, I mean, there's nothing scary in Nightmare on Elm Street 6 either, Freddy's Dead. But it still can be a fun time with the kills.
Again, I'm not debating fun. I'm just saying tone. You're saying, yay, we're getting something that is cranked up to 11. I'm just going to say that when we get these scenes started, and yes, this was the era of Jersey Shore, right? This was all the MTV shows about going to Cancun. And I never had this life. I never knew anyone that had this life. There's nothing about this that is that appealing or that I want to see destroyed. They're going to spend a whole lot of time killing spring breakers and having spring breaker culture be the target of satire.
Well, I always thought way back when, even when they were advertising Girls Gone Wild, there's an SNL sketch that really voiced it well, that the kid was busted by the dad watching Girls Gone Wild and saw his daughter on there, right? Who are these kids who are willing to be exploited this way at spring break just because they're all drunk and want to be on TV? It seems like really, nowadays, I guess it seems quaint considering how much people share about themselves on the internet.
Yeah, this was pre-OnlyFans.
Right, so it just seems to me that the spoof here is certainly maybe 5 or 6 years too late, if not 10. However, we all understand what the vibe is and what they're going for. Although I was confused, though, if Jerry O'Connell was a porn director or a Girls Gone Wild director, because that's very unclear. They have both things going on here. However, it doesn't really much matter, does it?
I've actually watched Girls Gone Wild. It is incredibly dull. They had great television ads, but when you actually are just watching drunk women show tits again and again and again, and every once in a while they happen to peck on the lips as a tiny kiss. I mean, it was so blue-balling, it was unbelievable. It's no fun watching college girls kiss unless you're in the room with them, I'll just say from experience. So I think that this guy is clearly Girls Gone Wild and not doing porn in any way, just doing titty shots at spring break.
Yes, so we're here to talk about our main character. I think there's two that are worth talking about. The star of this is someone I don't know. I mean, I know who Steve McQueen is, but I don't know who Stephen R. McQueen is.
He's his grandson.
Is it really?
Yes. So this guy is quite successful. He's been on TV for quite a few years now, and he has a new show where he's still on the show, Chicago Fire, I think, or something.
Oh, he was on Vampire Diaries, too.
Yeah, he's been working for years, so the name has not held him back. I guess he is this time's Michael B. Jordan, this Stephen R. McQueen, that he is able to utilize that middle initial to help people of a younger generation not think about the more famous namesake.
Well, he won me over wearing the Pixies shirt. I have that same shirt. I actually wanted to wear it tonight. I forgot to do it. But yeah, he gets a... I can't tell, though. The characterizations in this are so thin, I can't tell whether he's a nerd or a cool guy, or what. He's a guy that gets soda thrown on his cool Pixies shirt because he's talking to a co-ed that he probably used to have high school classes with and clearly is crushing on.
Yeah, I took it as he was the nerd because he was getting picked on and was a little bashful around Kelly.
But he's not a nerd. I mean, like, in no way does he embody that. Handsome, virile, is able to do all the theatrics at the end of this, boat stunts.
But he's not a jock, he's not a surfer guy, he's not a hard body, right? He's just a normal guy compared to those guys that Kelly is hanging out with. He kind of feels inadequate, and they also make him feel that way because he's being bullied by them. He definitely looks different than they do, but I agree, he's not a nerd. He's just not a beefcake.
I mean, I don't think there's that much difference between him and Todd, but what we're told is that Kelly is back for spring break, and she might want to hang out with him, but she's got this annoying DJ boyfriend who is throwing soda and is whisking her away. And so he is our star because in this low moment, he is given an opportunity to spend the next, day, weekend, I'm not sure exactly what it is, filming buxom women kissing each other in the water that Jerry O'Connell is going to blow in and say, we need a location scout for Wild Wild Girls.
And I've seen Jerry O'Connell do a lot of roles, and I just want to give a shout out to his performance here as the totally coked out Derek Jones. He is so high energy in every scene and so manic, and he normally doesn't play this high energy.
So Jerry O'Connell bothered me in this movie. I found him annoying, in fact.
But you are supposed to.
Yes.
He's contemptible. There's good horny and then there's bad horny. Jake is good horny, and Derek takes it too far. He's too much of an exploiter, and that he, is just barking these orders and all of that. We get the idea even before we have real concrete facts to prove it. It'll come late when Jerry O'Connell's choking Jake that we realize, okay, asshole. But we get the idea that this is fish food. This is someone that we should want to see get devoured by fish. And because he's been offered this location scout thing, he isn't going to be able to look after his little siblings. And this is going to create a rift with the other main character of this movie. You've already mentioned her. Elizabeth Shue, what is she doing at this point in her career? Again, have I seen her since The Saint?
She was kind of at a low point in her career. She was doing Hamlet 2 around this time, playing herself. She, since has had a TV comeback. She's on The Boys.
Cobra Kai, she also went back on there for a quick episode or two.
Yeah, she did a guest spot on Cobra Kai, but she, around here, was a working actress who continued to work. I think the last big role she'd had before Piranha 3D, the last thing I'd seen her in, other than Hamlet 2, was Hollow Man, and that was in the year 2000.
Yeah, with Kevin Bacon. That was a pretty big movie for her, but really, it's an effects horror movie, really, so were anyone going there for her? Maybe not, but certainly it was a hit, and she was in it. But she's quite capable as the lead in this movie. She's doing everything she needs to and probably more.
I guess I'm wondering, not that the casting would make total sense, but couldn't you just go with Ving Rhames if you just wanted a cool sheriff? What does Elizabeth Shue have that would make you want to see her be Roy Scheider? It feels like a strange choice to put as the lead of this movie.
I think that, you know, having a female sheriff helps with gender balancing because most of the women in this movie are not going to have much depth.
Or clothes on, for that matter.
Yeah, no, none of the women have depth, but most of them are, yes, objectified. And she's fit, she's able to do, or at least her stunt double, and she looks believably like her stunt double. She's able to do some things. But yeah, she is not going to have to do tequila body shots.
Yeah, so I like having a strong woman in this movie in some capacity. And I think she does very well in these early scenes. She shows herself as a tough sheriff, trying to be nice, trying to let the drunk driver off with just a warning. And when the drunk driver hits on her too much, flipping him over, threatening to tase his friends in a very 3D shot of that taser sticking out at the audience.
Chekhov's taser, that she's going to end up shooting fish with this and make them explode in close-up. This is just a joke about 3D, right? Like, nobody would want to see the hero tase killer fish. But yes, we do want to see fish blow up in our face. And so, yes, the business that they give her, while her son is on the hook for going off on this risque film shoot, she has to accompany some seismologists to the epicenter of that quake. She has to go where Matt's boat was because they've found that body. And help me out with this. How did it wind up in the swamp?
It floated downriver. I don't know. I like that scene a lot, though, when she's trying to reach for the boat and the thing pops out at her. I thought that was a very well done scene, and I didn't really question why the body was there because I was entertained by that entire exchange with Huron Ving Rhames.
But that is weird, right? Like, we have to be now playing. The boat and the body being still connected is weird when the body's not in the boat.
They would float the same direction, but yes.
At different speeds, maybe, but yes. And one's more like a bobber and one's a boat. But it was a really well done scene at night, and I just, that scene gave me hope for the rest of this movie, Stuart, because I know we're going to get tons of TNA, and I know we're going to get tons of over-the-top gore and silliness. This was a grounded part of the movie that helps the plot move along, and it actually gives Elizabeth Shue something to do. And you ask why Ving Rhames isn't the star. I question why Ving Rhames took this role. It's a nothing role. Why is he here? He's better than this.
Is he better than this? Let's remember, he not only was in Dawn of the Dead, the remake, but in Day of the Dead, the remake with Tara Reid. I mean, is he better than this or is he right at this level?
He works for Arby's, right? Yeah, I mean, you're right.
Well, he's a job every few years when Tom Cruise makes another Mission Impossible movie. But I have goodwill towards him, just like I do with Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, goodwill, but that doesn't mean Ving Rhames is above this part.
Fair enough. The way I see it is Ving Rhames is cool. You know, he has a presence, he has a menace, he has a physicality. Yes, you expect him to dominate the screen, and the part is, if it were not him, you would not even notice the character.
Agreed.
Which is why you cast him.
Or you get rid of one of these people and just make it about a person with presence. I mean, I'm hearing that this is not a popular thought, but get rid of Elizabeth Shue.
No.
No, she grounds the movie very well.
Okay. She does nothing for me. I can honestly say that I feel like she doesn't have a sense of humor, and she doesn't... I guess that's the grounding, right? That she's not playing it for laughs?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
We have Paul Scheer driving a boat later in this movie. You need Elizabeth Shue to have some sort of counterbalance, or this boat's gonna sink.
But where does Adam Scott fit into this? A comedian playing a straight man seismologist?
A hero seismologist at that.
Now, Adam Scott, for those who don't know, I know primarily from Parks and Rec.
Now on Severance, a show everyone should be watching. But here's the thing. I thought a lot about, you know, you mentioned Jurassic already. Jeff Goldblum, you know, everyone expected him. Oh, you're a nerd, Jeff. You're a nerd. But then he shows up buff and he's all macho in that movie. I think that it's some kind of joke that Adam Scott is, yeah, a nerdy earthquake scientist. But well, by the end of it, doing gymnastics off beams and landing on skidoos and rescuing bikini babes from the water.
It's the only role in his entire filmography where he'll get to do shit like this, I do believe. And I haven't seen his whole filmography, but I stand by that.
Well, he's the nerd that holds back. He is there with two other seismologists, and they're the ones that are putting on the wetsuit and going down to become fish food, because they have, through sonar, detected the fact that there is a lake within the lake.
Wait a minute. Stuart, you missed the whole thing. One of the guys was totally checking out the girls and didn't want to do his work. So in horror movie language, as we've talked about countless numbers of times, that is the reason he gets it versus Adam Scott. Adam Scott's there to do the job. This guy's looking at the babes.
But one of the seismologists is named Paula, played by Dina Meyer. Now, this is an actress I know pretty well from her 90210 days to all of her work in Saw. She was in almost all of the Saw films.
Starship Troopers, right?
Starship Troopers, absolutely. The fact that she's in here, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a character that's going to carry on for the film for a while. They got Dina Meyer in here for, what, 5 minutes of the film? She's going to be killed so quick.
I don't know who this is, but I didn't see Saw.
Well, I know her name, and I agree with Arnie. I saw her in the credits, and I was like, where is she? I didn't even know she was here. Like, I saw her, like, maybe they cut her out. I mean, she's not as big a name to me as Ving Rhames, but she is a notable actress for people of our age because we've seen all of these movies.
Yeah, they're the ones that are going to have the alien moment. Like, there's this cave within a cave, and you go down there, and there are all these eggs all over the place. They're beautiful pink stacks of eggs, and we'll even have a 3D close-up of a little fetus that floats up. And as Sam, the guy, the one from Desperate Housewives that was ogling the girls with the pasties, yeah, he, in reaching out to one, gets his fingers snapped, turns his light on, and sees a whole wall of teeth.
That was a great moment.
Yeah, a very fun scene there, and a good death, a good couple of deaths right here. The way that they go back up to the boat and they pull up Paula's body and it's just this skeleton and the fish is still feeding on it and starts flopping next to it. Again, bad CGI fish. Fun scene.
Fun scene. I really enjoyed this entire thing. The cave was well done. Remember I mentioned before the CGI I was not very happy with in that first scene down here in the cave. I'm very happy with it. Maybe because it's darker, I didn't really care as much. But I thought the filming of it, how it was staged, all of it worked for me 100%. And this is probably the quote-unquote scariest scene in the movie, if you will. They really start to play it up here. Obviously, it goes much farther into campy land very soon, but here, it's just a very well done and entertaining scene.
Agreed. I like this, and I'll just go ahead and say, I wish this were a little bit more of the tone or more of this was in the finished product. There is so much sunburnt debauchery in the rest of it. It could have used a better balance of actual, I don't know if we want to call them exactly horror scenes, but they just carry a little bit more weight. It's the stuff that I was also complimenting. The thing that saved the Dante movie was that it got ruthless like this back in 1978, right at the end, that we're 30 minutes into the movie and they're letting us know all the kills are going to be like that, really feels reassuring. Like, oh good, this understands that it needs to be contemporary. We're not going to have the pokey, meandering piranha movie from 1978.
These are more like dinosaurs eating, which is also a nice touch because they are from the Mesolithic era, which I think is a brilliant idea instead of having them be scientifically changed, because then you can have these voracious eaters like dinosaurs.
And that gets confirmed by Christopher Lloyd, who I didn't know was going to be in this movie either, but has one scene here running an aquarium and they bring him there. There's one fish still inside Dina Meyer's wetsuit. They bring it in and he can grab the fossilized version of its ancestor and say, yes, this is the original Paleolithic piranha that should not be alive.
Do you think Christopher Lloyd was on the set for 1 day or 2 days? He does pop back up later, but this was obviously just a cameo role where you get the mad scientist doctor from Back to the Future to play the mad fish doctor here.
Well, look, as we talked about during our Back to the Future retrospective, the man can spin exposition like nobody's business. He always makes it sound interesting and different, and you listen to what he says, and what he does is a major data dump. You get the king of data dumps to do this scene, and it's a cachet for people our age. It works on so many levels, to have him here so much better than his stupid cameo recently on The Mandalorian, which made no sense. Here, it makes plenty of sense they got this guy for this moment.
Yeah, and the data that I'm hearing getting dumped is not only is it a prehistoric fish, but they hunt in packs. They have a mentality. So, like, once they taste blood, they'll all move at the same time, like, with a one mind, and that they've survived this long by being cannibals. That if you're going to have a problem with the fact that this should have died off by now, they were sealed away in a cave for so many eons, they've gotten to be that way by killing each other, which makes them even scarier.
Well, I also don't know how a scientist looking at fossils knows that fish hunt in packs, and I can see how he got the conclusion that they had to have eaten each other by common sense, I guess, but how they hunt in packs, how we figured that out from a fossil, no idea.
Meanwhile, you mentioned that this was a day's worth of work for Christopher Lloyd. I kind of agree. I wonder if that's not true of Ving Rhames, even. That might explain the minor presence that he has here. I feel like most of this movie, most of the shooting days, were with these young cast. Many times, we're cutting away from these moments that we've been talking about to reassure, I assume, the young audience that this is a movie meant for them, that we have established that Jake is paying his siblings $20 more than he's getting paid for babysitting to stay at home. But these little kids, they're going to take their brother's money and do what they want. Get into a canoe and go sailing off to Sand Island to fish, and they'll get stranded there.
In real life, this actually horrified me. Like, the thought of these two kids trapped on this island, their boat floats away, no boat is coming near enough to see them. I was actually in legit terror that these kids could die on Sand Island, not of piranha, but of exposure or something.
Yeah, and these kids should know better. They should always wear life vests when you're in a canoe. That's basic safety, kids. Going off without parents, I mean, we've all done that once in a while. Can't fault them for that, Arnie, but I fault them for the complete lack of safety measures. I mean, come on, kids.
And this is really where we get the first close-up. We've already seen a good one of the piranha in the tank and all of that, but I think if we were to go chronologically through the movie, the first time I can remember really feeling like we're looking at the piranha was when Laura, the little girl, goes barefoot into the shallow water to try and wave down a speedboat that's passing. And of course, she cuts herself on a shell. The blood's going to bring POV, some killer fish that almost snaps her feet up, but she walks out in the nick of time. It's really helping us build suspense on what it's going to be like when all these kids get eaten.
The thing is, you bring up Zane and Laura, and they are out there. We do get a little time with them. But I do think that a recommend or not recommend of this movie is going to come down to how much do you enjoy Jake's plight dealing with Jerry O'Connell and crushing on Kelly on this wild, wild girl's boat? Because if you go with this and all the TNA that it's going to carry, then you're definitely going to have a good time for this movie. But about half the runtime is going to be TNA and Jerry O'Connell yelling at Jake and getting Kelly to lick tequila out of another girl's belly button and things like that. I have fun with this stuff. I'm a proponent of TNA in films. There's plenty of it here. So I like it, but I think this is going to be very subjective.
To answer your question, it's okay. Yes, I feel like you need it. I think that this movie's origins are in this kind of filmmaking. You want to have gratuitous nudity. You want to see two girls in 3D naked making out with each other while the guys film it through a glass-bottom boat. You want those moments, but do you want half the movie to be that? I would argue that's the mistake of this movie, is that it overplays its hand in indulging its youngest, horniest male audience. They sacrifice what should be characterizations all across the board. A disaster movie, a good one, has lots of different storylines, and this storyline takes over.
Yeah, I got a little bored with the boat scenes being so repetitive after a while.
Mm-hmm.
I saw what they were doing, the fake out with Kelly in the tube. Obviously, it was a fake out. Like, I was on to them big time. However, once people start getting eaten, I think they had one or two scenes they didn't need here on the boat. But obviously, it's kind of nice that once the carnage happens, they all get it. Like, it's kind of fun to spend some time with the people who are going to get eaten. That kind of thing, instead of just disposable people.
But they are disposable people. I never grow to like the fact that Kelly and Jake maybe like each other. And then we have this kind of cruel model. I think her name is what? Danny? Yeah, Danny seems to see that there's tension between them and is like, you guys should do body shots off of each other, in part to, I think, cause trouble. She seems to be a shit stirrer. But none of this is that interesting. I think it's here because, you're right, there are too many scenes of it, but there is a segment of the audience that wants to see 3D boobies and 3D vomit projectile coming at the lens. So we have all of these scenes go on long.
And I am that segment.
Yeah, and again, I'm not trying to say anything about anything other than if you like that, Arnie, you've correctly positioned this. If you like that, you are going to be so served. If you like that in moderation, you are going to have your patience tested. I think it does get a little repetitive, boring, particularly since I don't have the 3D experience. I can't even enjoy the idea of being soaked in her vomit.
Yeah, I was missing the 3D this time around. I'm traveling. I thought about buying a second Oculus just so I could watch this in 3D for this review. I just have to go off my memories of watching it back in the day.
So, Arnie, are Stuart and I accurate in thinking that the movie starts to drag a little bit here before the carnage really happens? Or are we just, because these scenes were laborious for us, like, because were you watching the time about when the shit hits the fan? Or are we incorrect in thinking that this takes way too long to get started?
Here's the problem is I find Jake and Kelly to be a cute couple. I like the romantic tension there. I've already brought up I watched 90210 back in the day. This reminds me of a 90210 romance type thing that would be going on. And so I enjoy the scenes with them. But yes, I am shocked that it's nearly an hour into the film before the piranha really cut loose.
We've had little bits. We've had the two nameless divers going down and getting eaten in the cave, which was a pretty good scene. And then they've thrown this like really filler stuff. Blink and you miss that there was a cliff diver that like just jumps in and the water bubbles red. Do you even remember that that happened? It's almost like subliminal. It's cut so fast.
Yeah, I remember it now that you brought it up. The one I remember is, of course, the topless parasailer who was being filmed for Wild Wild Girls. And you just know as she's sitting in the water and she's screaming at the boat to go faster because something's biting her. And when they finally bring up the parasail, she's dead, eaten below the legs. That one was a lot of fun, too.
Agreed.
Here's what I don't understand about the relationship. That Jerry O'Connell's character, Derek, is going to get more and more angry at Jake. It's not because Kelly and him were making out or anything. It's not because it's a romantic triangle in any way, right? He's just a jerk. He's just drunk.
Yeah, he's just a coked out asshole.
Okay, so, and because he knows that there's a wet t-shirt contest that they have to get to, and the boat gets caught in some seaweed, his first reaction is you're causing a mutiny and to choke him. It felt like too much. But again, it helps me hate him. It makes me really look forward to Derek's death scene.
It is too much, but it's at this point that Jake realizes Zane and Laura are on that sand island, and he diverts the boat to go get them, and it's because of that that the boat gets caught on the seaweed. If it hadn't been for Jake, Zane, and Laura, then yeah, Derek would have been at that wet t-shirt contest, and his boat wouldn't be marooned the way it gets. But because they go to rescue those two little kids, which Derek wasn't going to do until Jake kind of subtly threatens, hey, my mom's the sheriff, and then all of a sudden Derek's wiping the cocaine off his upper lip and realizes what shit he could actually be in, hence why the mutiny thing. This is all Jake's fault that they get in any trouble at all.
And why Kelly's in danger later in the movie. It's all Jake's fault completely.
And yet I still kind of like the kid, or at least I don't hold that against him. Like, it feels like the failing of youth. A youthful indiscretion is that, hey, I can have an adventure with sexed up models, and then, oh, it's not that fun, and I'm covered in puke, and yeah, the girl that I really like is here and making it weird. I still find him to be someone that we can root for, particularly as, yeah, they run aground of the rocks. He tried to warn them. Something happens. This crew, there's two models, there's the director, and then there's this cameraman, Andrew, Paul Scheer, you mentioned him. What happened to him? Is he a cutscene? He literally just vanishes from this movie.
Well, I thought he fell in the water.
If he did, they didn't have a shot of it, because I went back and tried to look for it.
Oh, then I guess he just disappeared. I don't know. I thought he fell in the water and got killed right around here, but I don't remember specifically, so maybe you're right.
For whatever reason, it gets overshadowed by Crystal and Derek's final, you know, which of course you're going to remember. Crystal going in and the fish immediately go for her, tear her limb from limb, and then burst through her own mouth. We see the piranha teeth coming through. I felt like that was something I wanted to see in the earlier piranha films. This movie is definitely delivering on the gore. It definitely knows everything you didn't get in Piranha 1, 2, and 3 and fixes it.
Absolutely. And then that fish goes through her mouth and goes right for Derek. They pull him up on the boat and he is eaten from the waist down. He's screaming, "They took my penis," which, because he's such a horn dog, would be the first thing he'd think about. And we're going to see that penis floating around as fish fight over it, and then it gets burped up. I was laughing so hard in theaters that they went there for this. It was just so extreme.
The burp gag was the icing on the cake of that entire thing. Completely unnecessary, but yeah, in 3D, I'm sure it was hysterical to see a floating penis in there. I couldn't stop laughing at Jerry O'Connell. Like, clearly his waist was underneath. It was a fake bottom half of his body. That effect was, he did not sell it. It was just so much fun to see him trying, almost winking to the camera like, "I'm actually in the boat."
Yeah, they did it even in the first Piranha movie. There was that old Jack guy, that whatever, with the legs. It felt like a nod to that. But yes, they've been able to tweak it with CGI so that you could really see the gnawed off muscle and sinew of his legs and all of that. And yeah, I mean, again, it lives and dies by the fact that it's going to waggle his penis in front of you, have fish eat it, and then burp it up onto the screen. Is that too much? If it is, turn it off, right? This is not for you. This is what we're here to do. And certainly when we cut back to the wet t-shirt contest, it feels like 10 minutes of extreme.
That one woman who the two guys are lifting her out of the water, and then she just cuts herself in half kind of thing, like her body just splits in half. The CG was terrible, but it was hysterical that her body just like fell apart.
And there's another woman whose body falls apart. Like when a floating stage falls, a wire flies off and cuts through two women and cuts one woman in half, and her body slowly slides apart. Again, bad CGI, fun death.
That's a Titanic joke, right? Because as it's tilting, it makes that sound that the ship does when it breaks in half. It felt like they were thinking about Cameron. And I hear they asked James Cameron and Joe Dante to do a cameo in this scene. They were supposed to play some of the cops that were helping the half-eaten people come out of there. And imagine that. James Cameron is too busy to do Piranha 3D cameos. Joe Dante has no excuse, but James Cameron had just made Avatar.
The stage reminded me of the first Piranha when the boat was too heavy and they capsized that one with the sheriff and all that kind of stuff. However, what that one didn't have, and this one did, and they didn't do it at all, was there was a lot of electronics on that floating thing, and those speakers. Wouldn't it have been interesting if the water became electrified and killed some people as well as some fish because of the electricity that's going to the speakers? I thought that was a missed opportunity.
Quite the opposite. Sheriff Julie is shooting tasers into the water. So yeah, they really aren't worried about conductivity.
And they leave the killing of people to Todd. Remember the asshole who threw the drink at Jake earlier? He's going to get in a boat and mow over people with that boat. He's killing people, as many as the piranha. Some blonde is going to get her hair caught in the propeller, and rather than help her, he's going to keep cranking that motor until it scalps her and takes half the skin off her face. Another fun death. Just so extreme here. This is, again, a subjective taste. I'm liking the gonzo gore of this. This will not be for everyone.
I mean, I feel like here's what it is. It's like the same joke. It's like hearing the same joke again and again and again. I've wanted this, and I've even advocated in earlier Piranha podcasts, they need to be doing this kind of extreme earlier and more frequently to make it fun. But all I'm going to say is love this 10-minute sequence. But I wish that the whole movie wasn't this. I guess that's the balance that I'm striking. They've done the best job yet of showing killer fish in a feeding frenzy, but they didn't fix the story.
Yeah, but Stuart, half the movie isn't this. Like, this is like the big climactic, we're going to go for everything here and pull people's faces off, and they're going for extreme.
Yeah, but the movie is all tits and vomit. I mean, it really is. Every scene is about that. And again, you even have, I'm surprised he didn't direct the movie, but you even have Eli Roth, the director of these kinds of movies, Cabin Fever and what have you. He's the MC of the wet t-shirt contest that gets his head ripped off here. I guess he's, if you can't get James Cameron and Joe Dante, he's your celebrity director cameo.
He had some really funny euphemisms for boobs, but one of them that didn't work for me is says, show me your Danny DeVito's. I didn't realize that was a euphemism for tits, but apparently they are in this movie.
Double D's.
Yo, I get it. Danny DeVito. Yeah, but if you're trying to get a girl to show you her boobs, the last thing you want to think about is Danny DeVito. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, again, too clever by half? I don't know. You either love it or don't. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot being spewed up on the screen. And again, I can only imagine in 3D how overwhelming all of this would be. It is Ving Rhames' death scene. Want to point out that we barely noticed him in the movie. They give him one moment to get medieval on them fish asses with a boat motor. When he runs out of, he's shooting them with a shotgun. And then when he runs out of ammo, he just goes to a speedboat, takes up the motor. And it really looks like he's winning until he isn't. And he maybe goes in the water or not. What's confusing is I know he's in the next movie, but I don't know if he's playing the same character. I think that potentially we could have a false impression that he died. But he definitely is down for the count. He definitely takes some bites here and will not be in the rest of the movie. When Julie, Sheriff Julie, has a Roy Scheider Jaws moment. I did love the joke that amid all of this, she gets a phone call from Jake saying, hey, our boat is drowning. And by the way, Mom, the little kids are with me. They do the exact same push and pull Hitchcock shot that Spielberg did for Roy Scheider when he saw that there really was a shark attacking the beach.
Not done as expertly, I have to say. It just didn't quite work as well, but I do like that they tried it. And yeah, we're going to get Novak and Julie out saving the kids with this. They throw a rope and have to do this like shimmy up the rope with the ankles and the hands.
I had a sense memory that just popped when the scene came on. There was a show, I don't even remember what network it was on, but it was called Cliffhangers, and it didn't last very long. But the whole point was, it was like an hour, and every 15 minutes, they'd have a different storyline, and it always was just like frying pan to fire kind of things for the character. And one of them was, one of the storylines I definitely remember and could wait week after week, was that there was a river of piranha, and all these people had to climb across a wire. I don't know if the screenwriter was familiar, if they grew up with Cliffhangers or not, but it certainly made me smile thinking of piranha movies of different eras.
And I love that when she gets over there and is telling the survivors to go across, Danny, who was one of the TNA models for Wild Wild Girls, is like, I didn't pole dance for nothing. Those pole dance skills.
I kind of like Danny. I'll be honest. I didn't care about Crystal, but Danny actually, she had the story. You know, she was the one that had tried to flirt with Jake, and I don't know if she really liked him or what was going on, but I was a little sad to see her go.
No, I knew exactly. As soon as the rope thing came about, I'm like, oh, she's gonna get eaten.
Of course you know she's gonna get it. I'm just saying empathy. Like, there's not a lot for any of these characters, but she's one of the characters I liked.
So I liked this entire thing with the rope, because they set up that they can't bring the boat closer to the other boat because the rocks, because they'll also get caught up in the rock situation. So they have this contrivance of the rope thing while Kelly's being trapped down below. So they had all this craziness with the gore and the killing with the fish. And here at the end, they have a sort of a raft kind of moment that we had in the first movie of, here are the stakes, here is what the problem is, and we have to get through this. And they actually sort of build up some tension on who is going to survive, who is not going to survive.
Yeah, I thought all of this for a climax was working pretty well. And again, was reminding me, just bringing it back to whatever my feelings are about piranha films. Like Killer Fish also had a similar sequence with a sinking boat. And so it just felt like the right thing to do. After killing all the spring breakers, you could have made that the climax. It feels more intimate, more right that you bring back the family drama. You bring back mom and the son and the sort of girlfriend who, yeah, when the ship wrecked, the glass bottom broke and she's trapped in the kitchen that's slowly filling with the piranha. It's good stuff. Yeah, I thought it worked.
It works great. I think it's a really smart way to end this movie. After having the craziness, then you come back down to earth and have a real tension kind of scene.
Three for three, except the thing that I'm wondering as I'm watching this, because I couldn't remember, I'm like, this is obviously the intimate climax where the characters we care about have to survive, but how's that going to stop the fish? You know, in a huge scene like we had just before, you could come up with some major way to kill the fish, and I'm like, how will they kill the fish? They have to kill the fish to be triumphant at the end of the film, right?
Did they even set up the propane tanks? Like, Jake comes up with all of this, but I didn't notice.
Yes. The first time he dives down, right there on the right side of the screen, you see the propane tanks as he's going through. I'm like, oh, there you go.
When was that?
So Jake says, Mom, I gotta go down and get her, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he...
Oh, wait, no. You don't set something up at the end. I meant, like, where in the first half when they were doing all the tequila body shots?
They did not set it up there. They didn't bother. Yes, it's lazy.
Okay, yes. It's just sort of a, like, I'm going to take Jerry, what's left of Jerry O'Connell, throw it off the side. The fish, again, they have that pack mentality, so they're all going to go for him, and I can go in and rescue the girl. I'm tethered to the boat that Novak's driving, and if he can get his motor running, then they can drag us away before this boat explodes.
Which is a callback, I guess, to the first movie when Paul is tethered and they count 200 and he gets pulled away out of the sewage plant thing. So that kind of makes sense that they go back there for this sort of climax.
It's fun. Elizabeth Shue does well. I think that everybody's given their moment.
Her moment is that she falls in the water and then they pull it, the rope taut again?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just checking in because Shue is the one character I'm not tapping into at all, ever into this.
I'm just this entire time thinking Adam Scott, movie star, hero, Thomas Jane guy in Deep Blue Sea. Like, it's amazing that Adam Scott is doing all these things, and he's competent in doing it. I just know his other work, and it's just really fun for me to see him in this mode. It's like the last guy in the world that you would think would do this, and he's fine doing it. It's convincing enough, but it's just really funny.
I love that he single-handedly, using one hand, cocks the shotgun, which is, like, a really hard thing to do. And you got him on a Sea-Doo doing that. That is so much fun because it's Adam Scott, who, of course, I had no clue who he was when I saw this in 2010. But now I'm just laughing my ass off about it.
He's the one that makes the joke about, I thought dynamite fishing was illegal. Let sheriff arrest this guy because Jake did it. Again, that explosion that he rigged. We see all the dead fish floating up to the surface and presumably... problem solved. No more killer fish. Except then Christopher Lloyd calls.
Yeah, and there were all those eggs that we saw earlier underwater, too, that would eventually hatch. So, I mean, this was a short-term solution at best. But yes, Christopher Lloyd calls, there are no developed sex organs on this fish. Do fish develop sex organs? I don't even know enough about fish anatomy to know what Christopher Lloyd is talking about.
You were talking about fucking fish at the beginning of this. I don't know. You had a whole spiel about that and Elizabeth Shue and something. I don't know, Arnie.
Did he dissect the fish or did he just look at it in the tank? I didn't understand how he even got to that conclusion either. But it doesn't matter because it's just about the stinger.
It doesn't matter because it's just setting up a punchline in which the mama piranha, Free Willy style, does the whole like leaping up and taking out Novak thing to give us some kind of punchline at the end.
Well, he says, we're the parents. And as soon as he finishes the word parents, the giant fish comes out like Deep Blue Sea and gets him and kills him. And that's the end stinger, which I thought was a lot of fun. What a great way to end the movie on that last kind of sting. Just silly, gigantic, gigantic piranha, which implies if they do a sequel, the piranhas can be that big and even worse the next time around. So, Stuart, Arnie, do you recommend Piranha 3D? Stuart.
Yes, I had fun with this movie. It's got good carnage. It has the right bloodthirstiness that you really want to see. I've wanted to see and haven't fully gotten. Until this installment, until this fourth Piranha movie, I felt like a lot had been lacking in the kills. So, hooray that they get that right. I also know that we're in the era of Jersey Shore and they need just to go with the spring break culture spoof. My complaint is, this feels like a 90-minute joke where you already know the punchline. There is no surprise to this movie. It is laying out these obvious characters, setting them up, and killing them in ways that it's all predictable. And so that kind of makes the movie feel like, again, you know the joke. And so maybe you can still laugh, or maybe you get a little bored. I do both. I kind of just wish more room had been made for different moods, different storylines. The way we talked about James Cameron kind of taking the divorce stuff seriously in that second movie, you just kind of wanted a little bit more something. You don't want all the characters to be so cardboard. And so that's what I'm going to say is, in the end, it is a flimsy series, because even though this might be the best one of the bunch, it's still only a mild recommend.
Arnie.
I loved this film. It is so exaggerated in every way from beginning to end that I had a big smile on my face when I watched it in 2010, when I watched it on 3D Blu-ray somewhere in the teens, and when I watched it now. This movie makes me smile and have a hell of a lot of fun. That said, I understand it's not going to be for everyone. I, for me, consider this a strong, strong recommend and a movie that I love revisiting. But for our listeners, it's a solid recommend. It's a run-of-the-mill recommend. It's, I think, a fun movie that, depending on your taste for the extremities of the nudity and the gore that's going to go on, and how much you can roll with the fun of the bad CGI versus being pulled out of it by the bad CGI, there's definitely an audience for this. That audience is me. I definitely give it a recommend, but I understand there's going to be a lot who can't stomach it, and Jerry O'Connell's penis floating in front of them is going to be too much.
You know, you're framing it as this movie might be too much for people, but I'd also just give room to even people that like that might get tired of it. It's the same joke. You got to admit, it's 90 minutes of the same joke.
It is, but it's a joke I find funny. And it especially works when the massive carnage hits. Just when I start to get tired and bored of all the wild, wild girl stuff, then we hit the pre-climax and I'm happy.
So I got tired in the middle with the movie and I was not enjoying the movie as much as Arnie was, for sure. However, I was in on the joke the whole time. And so this is the movie that it's kind of like reminds me of Child's Play, the series Child's Play, in that those second and third sequels were, you know, it's a very run-of-the-mill thing. And then they hit with The Bride of Chucky, I believe, was the fun one, right? Where they just went all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best one.
Right. Part four was like the wacky and the fun, and they found the right tone for that character. And so here, they had half the movie was kind of like Child's Play 2 and 3, and then they found their Bride of Chucky, and they went for it. I really liked that the whole movie was extreme, and when they got to the kills, they went that far. So normally what I would just be tired of all the TNA and I want some more plot and more actors and more character and all that kind of stuff. When the carnage started happening, I was enjoying the sheer audacity of it. Because it was clear that, look guys, we already told you what movie we're making 500 times. Here it is. And it was just one thing after another that was just funny and fun and different and kitschy. So I was in on the joke. I enjoyed it half the time that Arnie did. Like, I wasn't as into it, but it's not a great movie. It's just fun to watch. So it's a recommend. It's a weak recommend from me, but it's a fun movie to watch. So 3 for 3 on this one, which is surprising, but it's just a lot of fun to watch this thing. I don't know if I'll ever go back to it, but I can certainly talk about it with fond reverence at a block party, you know, later this summer. You know, it's kind of one of those things that, oh, you got to see this. This is crazy.
It's got killer moments. It's got charm. And again, that's the word I go to. It's not good or bad. It's charm or boring. And this movie's not boring. So I'll give him that. But I kind of wish that the next one takes the lampshade off its head, right? Like, I kind of wish that we get a little bit of, dare I use the word, maturity. And yet, I know the thing is called 3DD. I'm not expecting it.
Yeah, you're going to be disappointed, Stuart.
I'm not disappointed. I'm saying this is what I want, and I know that I'm not getting it.
I mean, what do you expect from a film that's going to have David Hasselhoff?
Oh, is he in it?
Uh-huh.
I don't know anything about it other than I believe that, again, I guess I've already spoiled this, Ving Rhames is coming back, and Elizabeth Shue, and I don't think any of these teens are.
Okay. Well, I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to watching it for our review. I think the title alone is the funniest thing about it going in. Like, I think going in, they have the title, kind of like Snakes on a Plane that Arnie referenced earlier. Like, the idea of it is probably funnier than the actual movie. But we'll see. I'm looking forward to watching it for our next episode in this Piranha series.
We will get there next week.
So we'll be back in the water with Piranha 3 Double D on our next podcast. Talk to you soon.
Well, thanks for dinner, show. It was terrific. We should do it again.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
And now it is time to give thanks to the gods.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You're not holding me responsible. I think you are. You pulled the plug and you're holding me responsible? Incredible. You're blaming me.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
I wonder what has triggered this paranoid delusion.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Trust us, it's never cheating if it's with another chick.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2023, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Let's get wet!
And I've seen Jerry O'Connell do a lot of roles, and I just want to give a shout out to his performance here as the totally coked out Derek Jones. He is so high energy in every scene and so manic, and he normally doesn't play this high energy.
I mean, he's pretty much like this if you see him on Pictionary or The Talk. I mean, he does daytime TV now.
Wow, Stuart, you need to get a hobby, man, if you're watching Pictionary and The Talk.
I hate watching it. I can't lie.
So Jerry O'Connell bothered me